Thanks for joining me for this week's episode of the Sun on the Strip podcast presented by Greenspun Media Group. I'm Brock Radke, entertainment writer and columnist for the Las Vegas Sun, here every Wednesday to give you an update on all the entertainment news straight from the world-famous Las Vegas Strip, plus a compelling conversation with a performer or a personality from this dynamic Vegas showbiz landscape. So last week, it was all about Vegas shows that are now able to reopen. And just after I posted that episode, we had many more announcements about these show comebacks. Let me give you a quick rundown and get you up to speed. MJ Live is back at the Strat on March 18th. David Copperfield is back at MGM Grand on March 21st. The Australian Bee Gees show returns to Excalibur on March 15th. Terry Fader finally opens his new show at New York, New York on March 18th. And Absinthe is back at Caesar's Palace on March 17th. That's a pretty solid portfolio, and that represents almost all of the shows that originally reopened in October and November and had to close down again when things got sketchy heading into the holidays. I'm also expecting to see some reopenings at the V Theater, at the Miracle Mile Shops at Planet Hollywood in early March, and a couple other shows that were making plans months ago to come back, again, before COVID rules changed, might also be getting ready to return. And those are Matt Franco at The Link and Atomic Saloon Show at Palazzo. Hey, if you want to stay up to date on all the show stuff, you just need to go read my Curtain Up column that comes out every Friday at LasVegasSun.com. I'll have more news this week and every week right there with Curtain Up. An even bigger sign of new life for live entertainment in Las Vegas is at T-Mobile Arena, where the Vegas Golden Knights have received approval from state officials to get some fans back into the fortress starting on Monday, which is huge. You got to go to LasVegasSun.com to get all the latest from our hockey writer, Justin Emerson. But basically, 2,600 fans will be allowed into T-Mobile to root for the Knights, and you know they can't wait to do it. Also announced in the last few days, and also a really big deal, MGM Resorts is going back to full weekly operations at its three properties that were only partially open. Those are Mandalay Bay, Park MGM, and the Mirage, and that will happen on March 3rd. More people are visiting Vegas these days, and it makes sense to open those casinos and hotels back up full-time. Also, a big new concert was announced for September 4th, and it's Maluma performing at Michelob Ultra Arena at Mandalay Bay. Tickets for that show go on sale Friday, and September 4th is the same night Harry Styles is set to make up for his postponed Vegas concert at MGM Grand Garden Arena, so that's going to be a big music night on this trip. Okay, now that you know everything that's going on, let me give you a cool interview. Ruby Lewis is one of the most familiar and striking performers with one of the most powerful voices to hit the strip in recent years. She's probably best known for opening Baz, the innovative musical theater piece that started at the Light nightclub at Mandalay Bay before moving over to Palazzo. She also headlined Marilyn the Musical at Paris Las Vegas, which had a short but buzzed about run a while back. Ruby's also an actress who has been seen in plenty of film and TV projects. She's celebrating her birthday this week with an all-new original show at Notoriety, a new hotspot at downtown's Neonopolis complex on Fremont Street. She's bringing in a bunch of friends to sing songs with her, including Vin A from the Bronx Wanderers, Jordan Kai Burnett from Magic Mike Live, Enoch Scott from Zombie Burlesque, Ashley Fuller, Janine Valentine, a whole bunch more. And she's going to debut her very first original single called Shock Value. It's definitely a hot ticket this week. Go check it out if you can. Here's my conversation this week with Ruby Lewis. I have to start by acknowledging your mind-blowing performance at the last Monday's Dark Show, because you sang, you did a Florence and the Machine song, and that to me seems like one of those songs that's like unsingable. Like, you should never try to do that thing, right? You killed it though. That was amazing.
Thank you. Cheryl Darrow put me up to that, and you know, I think it's because I had that Florence song in Baz that closed out the, you know, green light at the end of the show, and it had been a really long time, and singing Florence is incredibly cathartic, and by the end of that performance in particular, I was so out of breath. I'm like, good gracious, you can tell I'm not doing this 8 shows a week anymore. But I needed it. I laid it all out there.
I was out of breath after watching it.
I feel like Monday's Dark is a really good example of this because it happens at every show, but I'm always so impressed by performers being able to learn a song and then kind of make it their own. And that probably sounds goofy because that's just what you do, but it's still amazing to me. What is that process like for you, whether you're given something or you get to choose something, of kind of breaking down a song and deciding how you're going to present it?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think a lot happens in between the sound check and the performance. So day of, I don't really like to plan a whole lot. And after when I finished that performance, JJ over at the space, who's so sweet and helpful, he said he's studying voice, and he asked me, what's going through your head when you're performing? And I really think it helps me to choose a character or to drop into a character. And that Dog Days Are Over, that song in particular, I hadn't really broken down the lyrics to that before. I mean, I would sing along with it in the car, and you know, it was one of the songs where I actually had some of the lyrics wrong, just phonetically. And then when I realized it's about this abused woman and she was completely broken and she was busting out of this horrible abusive relationship, then that completely changed the character for me. And so then I try to dress up like the character. I try to put myself in the character as much as I can. That's the fun of it for me. So that's why I love songs that really tell a story. Even though, you know, it can be stressful learning new songs in a short period of time because you worry about lyrics and stuff. But for me, if I go up on a lyric, as long as I'm really driving the intention home, then I'm still happy with it.
We've spoken before, of course, and I've already talked about how much I loved your performance in Baz, but I can still do it again, I think. Is that the show that people kind of know you from the most, especially here in Las Vegas?
Totally. I mean, especially even dating back to Mandalay Bay, you know, people will come up to me and say they saw that show that I had no idea people were even seeing that show, first of all. But I think that it had just such an impact on folks here because it was so thoughtfully theatrical and it was in that nightclub space, but it changed people's perception about what was possible in Vegas. And the show in general is just so special as far as, you know, Baz Luhrmann's work and the soundtracks, but I miss it real bad.
Yeah.
I really miss it.
I think a lot of people miss it because it was so different from other Vegas shows. You know, it didn't, it felt like it fit well on the Strip, but it also felt like it was kind of from another planet compared to a lot of other Vegas entertainment, right?
Yeah, it was a true departure. And I think a lot of people, even going in after, you know, drinking and gambling all day long, and then they left like, I was moved. I didn't expect to be moved at a Vegas show.
The experience of doing Marilyn the Musical was a pretty wild adventure, to say the least. Mm-hmm. What was that like for you in terms of really headlining a show on the Strip? And what did you learn from that whole experience?
I was fortunate to have had the Paramore, the Broadway show, under my belt, to where I felt that I had the confidence to carry the show. That's kind of like a major, you know, mental block sometimes for some people. But I really had to keep my head down, and I'm such a fan of Marilyn that, to be honest, the process was just me trying to do her justice. And so everything else that was going on, the tech, the costumes, it was just kind of like I was there, but I wasn't always inside of her and trying to make sure that, you know, I channeled her as best I could. And then opening night, were you there that night when we started really super late? Like there were a ton of people there, so we started really late, but I was already at Places and I started the show like dead in the bed. So I was already at Places. It's Marilyn's the anniversary of, it's her birthday. Mm-hmm. And I swear to God, she was there. Like I felt a presence. And it was a weird calming thing. And, you know, it's always like getting shot out of the cannon on opening night. You don't know what's going to go wrong. But we had all hands on deck. It was an amazing cast and crew. I'm so sad that it ended because it was really such an amazing challenge for me.
Yeah. I was sad too, because I was really interested to see, you know, all Vegas shows, all shows everywhere, they evolve, you know, they're not the same mm-hmm. as when they open up, and we didn't really get to see that one change, but it definitely seemed like it was a big show and seems like a very demanding role.
Yeah. Well, and then we did take it to workshop in New York, a second version of it, and it became even more demanding because then I took on Norma Jean as well. So the transformation, it was, you know, it wasn't played by two actresses. It was just me as Norma Jean, then the transformation. So I took on the beginning of the show as well. And that was challenging.
Yeah. Yeah, that's super intense. So you're going to be back on stage in Las Vegas this week at Notoriety Downtown, which is a cool new venue that has popped up in the last year or so. And there's a lot of interesting things happening there. You're performing on your birthday.
Yeah, well, the 25th is my show, yeah, and my birthday is on Saturday. I don't want to stress myself out on my actual birthday. I know it's going to be really fun, but I want it to be just the most amazing show, so.
What can we expect from this show? What are you going to do?
I'm excited about this one. My very first original single, Shock Value, I've been marinating on it for a year, and now, and I wrote it pre-COVID, but it's oddly very... It seems like I would have written it after all of 2020 happened, but I actually wrote it in 2019. And so then I start thinking about shock value and what does it mean? And is it still even possible to use shock value in this day and age? And you know, in just doing my research, I thought, well, how fun is it to kind of pay homage to those artists who really leaned into that, like shock rock? You know, I do Ozzy Osbourne and Marilyn Manson and Kiss and Alice Cooper. And then there are the Madonnas and the Lady Gagas. And I just kind of built the show around censorship, the idea of, you know, what's appropriate for people and what shocks or shocked people, and kind of the dichotomy between. I was laughing yesterday because She Bop is a Cyndi Lauper song that was included in the Filthy 15 when Tipper Gore got all bent out of shape and, you know, said music was nasty and dirty. And I thought, She Bop, I'm singing it yesterday. I'm like, She Bop. And now we've got WAP. Like the difference between this, you know, it's just incredible.
Yeah.
And I am posing the question, is it possible to shock people anymore? It's an exploration. It's definitely theatrical. And then I've got just a host of friends coming and doing songs and duets. And it's just, I want it to be fun. And there's not going to be one single song that you don't want to dance to.
Was creating your own music, it didn't come out of, the idea of doing that obviously didn't come out of the pandemic. You've been doing that for a while, but how did you kind of get to this point where you were ready to create your own music?
Right. I mean, I have to be really sure about something to put it out there as far as that goes. And I think it took collaboration for it to just feel kind of cohesive. And then once it was wrapped up and tied with a bow, I'm like, this is a thing. And it's easily translated. I know exactly what it is, what it sounds like. I know I can articulate to a producer what I need it to be. And so that's when I just kind of dove into it. And particularly this year, I'm like, why am I not just going for it? You know, if anything, 2020 taught me, just freaking go for it. Put yourself out there, take the risk. What's the worst that's going to happen? And I have time. So that was kind of how it happened. And yeah, and I think that it's a very unique song. So I think it needs to be heard, and I'm excited about it. And again, very theatrical. So I can play a character while singing it, which I have to do.
Yeah. Yeah. You said that's kind of a big part of your process. So have you always written songs and music and just never really put the attention on it this way before?
Yeah. I have loads of notebooks and voice memos. And then a lot of times it's just, I don't know how to articulate to another person what it is in my head. You know, and then it's frustrating because I'm like, no, that's not it. That's not it. But I don't know how to say, I don't know how to tell you what it is. And then it just becomes, you know, discombobulated. And so I was happy that this one, it was straightforward enough to where, you know, I could work with somebody else on it. And they were like, I totally get you. I totally get the sound and the vibe. And yeah.
Has this kind of changed the way that you see what you do?
Definitely. I think particularly in the film and television arena, because, you know, I went from having auditions to not having any auditions. And then now because I'm leaning so much into like, what do I really have to say? And what do I want to contribute to the world? Those have become two big, big questions for me and what I put my energy into. So now if I get an audition for, you know, CSI, whatever, and it's just some whatever, and it's not going to change anybody's life, and it makes me feel dumb. It's like, just because it's a TV role, I don't feel passionate about it anymore. And I can spend all day doing a self-tape for it. And I'm just like, no, that doesn't feed me. I did that for years. I spent so much time and energy on any single thing that I was just grasping at straws. It doesn't matter what it is. And now I'm realizing that doesn't feed me as an artist, even though it might be nice to get the paycheck. So, and I think being more specific has been helpful. I've been calmer and happier just creating my own small stuff than just, you know, throwing spaghetti against the wall for big stuff.
Well, given all of that, where would you like things to go now coming out of, you know, hopefully coming out of this thing, things are starting to reopen again in Las mm-hmm. Vegas, at least, in regards to entertainment. Where is your focus moving forward, and is being in Las Vegas and performing in Las Vegas a part of that plan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm still honing it in as far as, I think it is helpful to have kind of a persona or kind of something that people know you for. So I'm like, oh, do I want to lean into Hollywood glam? Do I want to lean into rock and roll or whatever? But for me, I think what is going to happen, what I hope happens in Vegas, is that we can start producing. You know, the artists will have an avenue to create and to produce, and to produce really interesting underground stuff. You know, I'm imagining it kind of like the Roaring Twenties, like the underground's going to start sizzling first, and it's going to be stuff that challenges people. And I went to Cork and Thorn the other night, and it, you know, it's a small little place, but they were doing really cool like beat poetry and tap dancing. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, I think that this is going to be how we start to open up again. And I kind of just want to come up with different concepts to pitch to the smaller venues, whether I'm involved performance wise or not. I just love creating something and then seeing it come to life on stage. That's what I really love. And on camera, I guess too. I started doing some on camera stuff for myself in quarantine, and that was fun. Because you make it, you put it out there, it's a done deal, and people like it or they don't. But that's me. I want to start producing stuff and continuing to perform, but kind of like using this new lens that we all have now. Like, you know, we need art, we need inclusion, and all these different things that have come to light, I feel like can definitely be represented on the stage. And I'm ready to be kind of a voice and trying to push that moment.
Please allow me to give you my Vegas weekend entertainment picks for this coming Friday through Sunday. There's a lot of fun to be had, and I think it starts at Luxor with Fantasy, one of the longest running and most popular female revues in the history of the Strip. It just reopened last weekend, and when you go see this show, you kind of get two shows in one, because Murray the Magician and his amazing showgirl assistant slash fiance, Danny Elizabeth, you might remember my interview with those two on this show at the end of the year, they are bringing the comedy and the magic to complement the sexy ladies of Fantasy every night. And it is happening every night at the Luxor Theater. Another former Sun on the Strip guest, David Perico, takes his pop strings orchestra back to the stage at the Space on Friday for a performance and live stream show. If you can't get a ticket, hit up thespacelv.com. to watch it online. This one is celebrating Black History Month, so there's a ton of Motown, R&B, jazz, blues, and soul on the way. And last but not least, the Doo-Wop Kings, a four-piece a cappella group made up of singers from the great Vegas The Show. They're taking over the Vegas Room at Commercial Center with shows on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. That's all I got. Thank you for listening this week. Special thanks to Ruby Lewis. She's singing with lots of her Vegas friends on Friday night at Notoriety Downtown. Go to notorietylive.com for more info. If you want to find past episodes of this show, go to lasvegassun.com/podcast. You can also listen and subscribe at Apple Podcasts. Thanks again for listening. Catch you next week. Take care.